Please be seated.
The session is called to order. The prosecutor, I'd like to ask you a practical question. Can you hear me? As you know, we have issued an order for the transfer of three persons who are presently detained in Rwandan prisons. Now, how are we going to do our program? You know that at the end of this month, there will be a judicial recess. In our order, we said that for 2 months, within 2 months at most, those persons would have to return to Rwanda. Now, how many witnesses do you have to present so that I should be able to program them? Shall we have time to have them transferred and to begin with hearing the witnesses for the defense?
As you are aware, the prosecution has only two witnesses left to call, and we hope to finish with our portion of the case by end of today or tomorrow morning. As far as the witnesses who are to be transferred, I have spoken to the witness victim support unit as well as the people in Kigali, and they will all make their best efforts to have the witnesses here tomorrow, probably late in the day. And I'm not sure how much time Councilor Tiangai will need to prepare these witnesses. But I am of the opinion that these witnesses can be heard before the judicial break and sent back to Rwanda in time.
We hope so. I would like to inform the prosecutor and the defense that this week will be sitting up to Thursday, will not be sitting on Friday. I would also like to add that, we have a colleague who has to travel to participate in a seminar as a resource person. He has been designated by the Secretary General of the United Nations. It's important for the person to travel, so we'll suspend this hearing for a few days, not many days, but I think we'll be sitting up to Thursday. I would like that we should be able to hear the two last witnesses of the prosecution, and if these persons are here tomorrow evening, we should begin hearing them on Wednesday or Thursday. If we could do so, I think it's a good thing. This is in the interest of the defense. So without any further waste of time, we'll start with the first prosecution witness, and hoping that the cross-examination will not take a lot of time. If we can hear the second witness tomorrow, then we should be able to hear one of the two persons coming from Rwanda. The other person will wait for a few days, and I think we'll be able to finish before the judicial break. Is this plan agreeable to you, defense counsel? Mr. President, I'm not opposed to the fact that the hearing should take place normally. What I fear is probably the rush. I think if we do not have time to hear the witnesses during the appropriate time, then I think the witnesses could come next week. Counsel, I think I have informed the government of Rwanda. I've given them a strong indication. In fact, they have been very cooperative. I think if we want them tomorrow, they could come tomorrow. I suppose you are the ones who ask for them. And if you want them to come, they will come. I understand, Mr. President. What I fear is the fact that there may be a rush. No, the President says there is no rush. I'm very clear. We'll finish with the prosecution witnesses. Then those people could come tomorrow evening if possible. If we can come begin with at least with one and take the two others later on, that's fine. But I think it's important for them to come tomorrow. This is something important. This shows that we did not just ask, but that we indeed want them to come. I am reassured, says the council. The president says that nothing will be rushed. In any case, it is not the practice in this chamber for things to be rushed. Mr. Prosecutor, I give you the floor.
Thank you. Excuse me. At this time, we would like to call witness NN, Nairobi, Nairobi.
Draw the curtains.
No, you went far. I told you, bring. Bring the.
Witness.
Okay. What is this? Évidemment. C'est idiot.
Good morning, witness N. Good morning, Mr. President. Witness N, you have been called to give testimony. You have been called by the prosecutor to give testimony. Before giving the prosecutor the floor to examine you in chief, you are going to rise and make the solemn declaration provided for in the rules of procedure and evidence. You raise your right hand. I will say the declaration in French. It will be translated to you in Kinyarwanda and then retranslated into French. Now repeat after me. I solemnly declare. I solemnly declare that I will speak the truth. That I will speak the truth. The whole truth. The whole truth. And nothing but the truth. And nothing but the truth. Good. You may sit down. Now, I'll give her the advice we usually give to witnesses, namely that she's here to give testimony. The testimony will be translated as it is given. She's here as a witness, not as an accused. So she should stay calm. She should also say the truth as she pledged to do in her declaration, in her solemn declaration. She should not take sides here. She should speak without hatred. And she should speak nothing but the truth. She has sworn to speak the truth. And if she did not speak the truth, then the tribunal may do unpleasant things to her. On that note, I'll give the floor prosecution.
On just a practical note, I have our technicians have set up a video camera, which you can see behind you to your left, which is connected to this television screen in order to facilitate the audience viewing a portion of the courtroom. The technician has confirmed, and I have confirmed, that the camera is not pointed on the witness. It is pointed to Maître Tiengai and Mr. Akayesu. And with the court's permission, if you agree, may we turn this on for the audience.
The prosecutor, I thank you for that information. It is unfortunate that certain habits persist. I think we are being informed. You are the one informing us. We have never been informed that there is a camera. These are the unfortunate practices that have been adopted in this tribunal.
Unfortunately, I just recently learned of it myself, Your Honor.
Having said that, I think we are very pleased with this development because in this type of hearing, the public cannot see the judges nor the accused. I think this renders the hearing much more public. It is a positive development. I give you the floor.
I would like excuse me, I see a member of the witness victim support unit in the audience, and I would just like for him to give me a thumbs up to confirm that the witness is not seen. Let the record reflect he gave me a thumbs up. Thank you. Good morning, Witness NN. Thank you for...
Good morning.
Witness NN, I want to take you back to April of 1994. Can you please tell us where you lived? And you can just say by country and commune, please.
I was living in the Taba commune.
Is that in Rwanda?
Yes, it is in the Gitarama prefecture.
Around April 6th of 1994, or the days following, did you receive information that the plane of the president of Rwanda had crashed?
Yes, I heard that.
Do you recall where you were when you received this news?
I heard that when I was at home in the Taba commune.
At this time, do you remember what the atmosphere was like in Taba commune after this news was given?
There was an atmosphere which was not good.
Can you describe what you mean by an atmosphere that was not good, please?
On my part, I heard people say that Abiarubana had been assassinated by the Nkotanyi. It was said that the Nkotanyis were Tutsis who had taken refuge or who had gone into exile in 1959. Each Tutsi was threatened.
Let me ask you, back in 1994, April in particular, were you considered to be a Hutu or a Tutsi?
I was considered a Tutsi because I belonged to the Tutsi ethnic group.
Now, you mentioned that Tutsis or people were threatened. Did anything happen to you at this time, shortly after receiving this news?
It was after the assassination of the president of Rwanda and the president of Burundi that we greeted the Hutus, but they would not respond.
Were these people your neighbors?
Yes, they were neighbors.
At this time, you told us that you were at home. With how many people did you live with at this time?
We were 10, my parents, brothers, and sisters.
At any point in time, did the situation change in your particular neighborhood?
Yes, it changed because they started killing and destroying our houses. They also started eating our livestock.
You mentioned three things, that they started killing, destroying homes, and eating livestock. What happened first?
They started by destroying our houses and eating our livestock.
Do you recall the approximate date that this event began?
When Abiarumana was killed?
Destroying the homes and eating the cattle.
They started destroying and eating our livestock on the 19th.
Did anything happen to your home in particular?
They came to our home, destroyed our house.
Were you home at this time?
I was home with my parents and brothers.
Can you explain for us how this happened, please?
First, there were attacks by neighbors, or rather our neighbors were attacked. This attack started. Before the attack, there was someone who came around our place. He whistled, but I was unable to know who it was. He said that no Tutsi should spend the night in the country. That the Interahamwes and the GP, I suppose those are the presidential guards, had come, and that anyone hiding a Tutsi should be killed together with the Tutsi. He said that no cell should attack another, that each cell should work in its own area.
What happened at this time?
This meant that Each neighbor had to be killed. And the person who knew the family correctly, having said that, they started killing.
Was it at this time that your home was destroyed?
It was the following day that our house was destroyed and that our livestock was eaten.
After your home was destroyed, did you stay in the compound of your home or did you go somewhere else?
We could not run away because they kept us there.
When you say there, is that within the compound of your home?
Yes, it was in the ruins of our house.
While you were there, did anything happen at this time?
The attackers came, the assailants came and took my brother, and they cut him with a machete. The others destroyed the latrines, which were near the fence. They threw him into the latrine in our presence. They took my father, threw him into the latrine alive, and covered the latrine after that.
Did you ever see your father again after this time?
The latrine was covered with earth. We were told that women and girls were going to be killed after the burial of Abiarimara. After that, two men came. My sister and I were taken by these men who started sleeping with us.
Stop you here for a minute. I realize that this may be difficult to talk about.
Before your question, I would like the witness to specify who destroyed their house, because she said that the person who whistled said that no Tutsi should spend the night in the country and that each cell should work. The Tarahambwes and the presidential guards were supposed to be there. Who attacked her house? Was it her neighbors who attacked her house or the Tarahambwes or the presidential guard? It is our neighbors.
And to follow up on that question, do you know whether or not your neighbors were Hutu or Tutsi, the people who attacked you?
They were Hutus.
Now, returning to the time when the two men came and took you and your sister, again, I know this may be difficult to talk about, but we need to talk about this in a little bit of detail. My first question is, where did these two men take you and your sister?
It was in the courtyard of the home, and that's where they asked us to lay down. And it was still within the compound of our ruins that used to be our house.
Can you please tell us what happened to you at this time?
We believed that they had left after having killed our parents and after having destroyed our house. We stayed there believing that they had already left. Those who returned were the same people who were among the group of assailants, was so that they could continue to rape us. One took my sister and the other one took me. My mother begged them to kill us instead of raping us in front of her. The man replied that their principle was to make them suffer. They raped us and then they left.
I apologize for asking these questions, but in particular to you, I need to ask some specific questions. When you say they raped you, I need to ask you whether or not there was penetration by this man's penis or some other object into your vagina.
It is indeed their penis. But they were doing it in an atrocious manner, especially after having killed our brothers and our father. And these people were mocking us. They were taunting us.
Did these men have any weapons?
They were armed with bludgeons and machetes.
The same thing happened to your sister?
Yes.
How far away from you was your sister when this was happening to the both of you?
We were close to one another. We were near one another in such a way that one could see what was happening to the other.
After this attack, or this rape, how were you feeling physically?
I begged for death, but physically I was feeling very weak.
What happened at this time?
When they left, we remained with our mother, and subsequently two others came.
When you say two others came, where did they come to?
The two others who came were coming from attacks, but they were coming in hiding because they were our neighbors, and they were hiding because they were ashamed.
What happened at this time?
The one who raped me, my little sister was taken a little further away from where I was.
When you say this person raped you, did he do the same things that the other person did, the first attack that you told us about?
Yes, the same thing.
As the second act of rape was occurring, did this person say anything to you?
He said that marriage had been refused to them, but now they were going to sleep with us without any trouble at all.
What happened at this time?
After having raped us, they left, and they told us that if we were ever to leave the place where we were, that they were going to kill us. We stayed there without eating anything, without drinking anything. In the evening, there were two other younger men, and they asked us to come and teach them because they didn't know how it was done. And our mother asked us to leave because we should not continue to be tortured in front of her own eyes. We left our ruined house and we fled into the bush. One Hutu hid us. This was a Hutu who was married to my maternal aunt.
I need to back up for one.
Paternal aunt.
When this third group of men came, did they in fact rape you and your sister?
Yes, they also raped us. But they were about 15 to 16 years of age.
These three incidents or acts of rape that you have just testified to, did all these happen on one day or was it several days?
Yes, it was during one day, the day on which they killed my father and my brother.
What happened after this third incident of rape?
It's my mother who asked us to leave so that we should not continue to be raped in front of her.
Then what happened?
We left immediately and we went into the house of Hutu, who was married to my paternal aunt. He dug a hole in which I was supposed to hide myself, and my sister was hidden in the ceiling. We stayed in our hiding places, and I was brought food in this hole. They hid us for several days, and I think that it was about 1 week and a half. And they informed us that at the commune there would be a meeting, and that it was the Burgmaster's meeting. I wasn't able to move in the hole where I was, but maybe the Burgmaster was going to say that if the killings was to stop, the killings were to stop, I would be able to leave this hole. The meeting took place, and he was present. Upon his return from the meeting, he told me that the Burgmaster had stopped the killings. Wake up very early in the morning so that people don't see you and so that they do not come to destroy my house, but mostly so that you yourself can be able to rest. And this way you would be able to leave a place where you cannot move. We left very early in the morning. We went towards the Taba Bureau Communal. Before reaching the commune office, we met a group of assailants who were looking for people. There was a sorghum field, and my little sister passed below, but I went the other way. My little sister was lucky enough not to be meeting with the assailants, but I was unfortunate and they saw me. Two men asked me where I was going. I responded by saying that I was going to the commune. And they told me to come and that they were going to accompany to the Bureau Communal because they had been given orders by the Burgmaster. They took me a little further away and they started to rape me. After the rape, they left me there.
In this particular incident, how many of these men raped you? Was it one or both of these people?
Both of them raped me, one after the other.
What happened next?
They left me there, and since I had spent a lot of time in the hole, I wasn't able to move because I was as a handicapped person. I stayed there, and each passerby saw me because I was naked and I wasn't able to dress myself. Towards 11 o'clock, the others came. The other men who were herding cattle came, and they also passed over me. It was as if they were killing me off that time round. There were four of them. Two of them raped me, but the other two passed without doing anything to me. I stayed there, but since my little sister was close by, she tried to follow the events. She came and she asked me how I felt, and I replied that I could no longer move. Mr. Prosecutor, I want to have clarification. Just now she said that after the rape, not far from the Bureau Communal, she was left there and everybody who was passing was seeing her because she was naked. Is that a good understanding of what you said? It was not at the Bureau, no, says the judge, not far from the Bureau Communal. This is what I understood. Is that correct? And she said that there where she was raped, she was no longer able to move and all passers-by saw her because she was naked. Yes, said the witness. Excuse me. That's correct. So if I understand you, it was not a hidden place because It was a public place and people were passing by and they were able to see her naked. It was by the wayside. All right, the four people who came, who were keeping cattle and who came to rape her, she said two raped her, the others didn't touch her. Yes, two raped me and the other two left. When these two were raping her, since it was by the wayside, were there no passers-by who saw her? People could see, but no one had any pity for us. So people who were passing by were seeing the rape. Yes, they would come and look at us. Did you raise your hand, the accused? Mr. President, maybe we understood things differently, but I understood that she was raped when was going towards the Bureau Communal. Now, the fact that saying that they were near the Bureau Communal, I didn't register that. And then when she was asked, she said that there were some things which were not interpreted. She said, Turaji. I would have liked to hear how this was translated, because this leaves us to understand that it was near the Bureau Communal. Okay, let's have precision, clarification. Now, the place where she was raped, she says that it's by the wayside, it's close to the road. Is it near the Bureau Communal or is it far? Because she said that as she was going to the Bureau Communal, she was intercepted by these persons. Yes, I was still in the countryside before coming to the Bureau Communal. At what distance approximately was it from the Bureau Communal, if she knows? I cannot estimate the distance, but I was not very far from the Bureau Communal. Okay, Mr. Prosecutor, you may proceed.
You were telling us that after this incident, I believe you said you could not move or were unable to move. What happened at this time?
There's an old lady who lived quite near where I was and we knew each other. I sent my little sister, but after having verified that there was no one who was there, I asked her to ask what the situation was, and that maybe that she would have pity for us. This old lady gave my sister ghee. She said that I should put this ghee in my lower parts to see if the muscles would feel better, and this is what I did, because after using this ghee I was relieved. Towards 1600 hours I tried to move my legs and I felt that they were able to move, and when I tried to get up I saw that I could indeed get up.
What did you do after you got up? What, can the interpreter hear me?
No. Can't hear the French version.
I continued on my way towards the Bureau Communal.
Where was your sister at this time?
We were together. And we would hide. And we continued right up to the Bureau Communal.
How long of a walk was it from your hiding place to the Bureau Communal?
It was quite close. We walked for about 1.5 hours, but this was because I could not walk fast.
Do you recall what time of day it was when you arrived at the Bureau Communal?
We arrived at about 9 o'clock, but I'm not very sure. It was 9 o'clock in the evening, because we would hide here and there as we went, because the situation was not very good.
I know this, I'll strike that. Do you know the approximate date that you arrived at the Bureau Communal?
I do not remember the date, but I know that it was at the beginning of the month of May.
Can you describe for us what you saw when you first arrived at the Bureau Communal?
When I arrived at the Bureau Communal, there were many refugees who had come from several places.
Is it possible for you to give us an approximate number of refugees that were there?
I wasn't able to count, but if I were to guess, there would have been about 300 people, and most of them were children and women.
At this time in the beginning of May, could you tell us where exactly the refugees were? Were they within the compound, outside of the compound?
They would wander in front of the Bureau Communal offices, some within the grounds of the Bureau Communal, some outside. They were here and there, to the left and right, all around the Bureau Communal area. Microphone for the president, please. You didn't translate Mohanda. I didn't hear that. I'm speaking of you, the interpreter. You didn't translate Mohanda. Mohanda is the road. Is that not so? Mohanda is the road. I think that I heard Mohanda. That is true. She said in the compound of the Bureau Communal on the other side of the road, but you didn't mention the road. So I'm asking you to interpret, reinterpret what you have been told. I'm going to ask her, says the interpreter. Some were on the other side of the road, yes, others on the veranda, and the others all around the Bureau Continental. Bureau Communal. I had heard the word Mohanda, says the judge, and I did not hear you say road.
The Bureau Communal, do you know whose office that was?
It was the Bureau of the Burgmaster of Taba Commune, Jean-Paul Akayesu, who was our Burgmaster.
At that time, did you know who Jean-Paul Akayesu was?
Yes, I knew him.
How did you know him? From where?
I knew him when he was still a teacher at the primary school of Rumehera Guma. I knew him when he was a player in the team of the Taba Commune. I knew him when he was a sector inspector in the Taba Commune. In fact, even if there were meetings convened by the Burgmaster, he was present during those meetings. And I also knew him when he was Burgmaster. He was also the president of the MRND in the Taba Commune. Rather, the president of the MDR in the Taba Commune. Madam, please, did I understand you that you said you knew Mr. Akayesu since he was a player? What do you mean by player? There was a team in the Taba Commune. He was a player in that team. I understand. What kind of team? It was a football team. Football team, says a judge, Judge Aspergreen. That means that the witness knows Mr. Akayesu quite a long time ago. I suppose that Mr. Akayesu was young when he was still playing football. I was still young, says the witness. I understand. Thank you, madam.
When Akayesu was a teacher, were you ever his student?
There was a time when he taught in our school. He was replacing a woman who had given birth, but he was not directly my teacher as such.
At this time, I would like for you to please take a look around the courtroom and tell us whether or not you see Mr. Jean-Paul Akayesu.
Yes, I recognize him. He has documents in his hands. He's behind the he's on the second row.
Please.
He's wearing a khaki colored trousers, a dark suit, and a tie which more or less resembles his trousers. From where the witness is sitting, can she see Akayesu's trousers? Or is it because when the witness stood up a while ago, the witness saw him? The witness says it's when I passed near him that I saw his trousers.
It could reflect that the witness has identified the accused, Mr. Jean-Paul Akayesu. Did you see Mr. Akayesu at the Bureau Communal when you first arrived that evening?
I did not see him because I reached there when it was already dark. I only saw him the following day in the morning.
When you saw him the next day, what was he doing, if anything?
It was as if he had just gotten up. He was like somebody who had just had a shower and they had something around his neck.
Where were you at this time?
I was in front of the Bureau Communal in the courtyard of the Bureau Communal.
When you saw him, you said it looked like he just woke up. Was he doing anything in particular?
I saw him when he was coming from the IPJ building. It was very early in the morning. It would appear he had just had a shower.
Did anything happen at this time?
When I saw him with something around his neck, he was moving to the place where two Interahamwes had a woman. He had a towel around his neck. The word assumer, it's not good French. If you are talking about a towel, I think you should say it's a towel because it has to be interpreted. So I think Akayesu had a towel around his neck, not a suma as was said in French. When I saw Akayesu, who had a towel around his neck, he was moving to the place where two Interahamwes were dragging a woman to rape her between the Bureau Communal and the Centre Culturel, the Cultural Centre.
Thank you. At this time, with the chamber's permission, I would like to use the overhead projector and use an exhibit which will be marked as Exhibit 127B, as in blue.
Okay, so you have the floor. Thank you, Mr. President. I think I must say something concerning the interpreter. Earlier, the witness said Akayesu was a headmaster of a school, and the interpreter was suggesting an answer that I was the headmaster of a primary school. And now we are talking of Exhibit 127B, I suppose. And directly she starts talking of the Bureau Communal, yet the prosecutor never talked about the Bureau Communal. I think I'm surprised. I believe you, says the president, because on several occasions I have drawn the attention of the interpreter to the annoying habit of answering in place of the witness. You are not here, interpreter, to say what you think. You are simply here to interpret. You know that this exhibit has been shown here on several occasions. You do not have any right to say that you are going to be shown Exhibit 127, which is the Bureau Communal. This is not the first time that you are talking about things that do not concern you. This is not going to continue. You are not here to give testimony. You are simply here to repeat what has been said. Counsel Chenga, unless I am mistaken, this Exhibit 127B has not been disclosed to me, was not given to me by the prosecution. It would appear we saw this exhibit. It resembles to 127. It's almost the same thing, apart from measurements which have been taken. I think the two exhibits are exactly the same thing. 127 and 127B, they are the same thing, with the exception that on one there were measurements and on the other there were no measurements.
The original 127 was a blank diagram, as we see here, which we used for witness JJ and made some markings at that time. Mm-hmm. 127B was what we introduced with the investigator, which had measurements, or 127A, excuse me. Now, 127B is, again, a clean copy of Exhibit 127 that I would like to use with Witness NN, so we have, so it makes it less confusing.
From a point of view of principle, I think you should have disclosed all the exhibits to the defense, even if they are the same. Mr. President, I would like this document to be given to me.
I've given courtesy copies to the registry, who is in the process of handing it now. And I have given Mr. Chen Gai a copy of this at least 3 weeks ago. And it has not changed since then.
Okay.
Witness NN, I would like for you to take a look at Exhibit 127B and tell me if you recognize this.
I can see that this is a picture of the Taba Commune.
In this photograph, or excuse me, this diagram, do you see the area where you saw these Interahamwe take that woman, where you mentioned to us it was between the Bureau Communal and the Cultural Center?
There is the Cultural Center to the left, and the Bureau Communal slightly to the right, and the woman was dragged between the two buildings.
The Cultural Center, when you look at this diagram, is it to the left of the diagram or to the right of the diagram?
It is on the left. The Cultural Center is on the left, whereas on the right is the office of the Buckmaster.
To the building to the left, which is building number 5, and you can tell me whether or not this is what you're talking about.
That is a Cultural Center.
Your Honors, I will mark it with a CC. Now, can you tell us exactly where this woman was taken, please?
It is there, between the Bureau and the Cultural Center. It is towards the top. It is between the two buildings.
Now, I'll place my pen between the two houses.
It is at that point. It is exactly at that point.
With a X. Thank you. And where were you at this time?
I was very close to the flag, towards the right.
Point to, actually, where is the flag at the Bureau Communal exactly?
The flag is towards the bottom of the Buckmaster's office.
Office, and you can tell me where to go.
Below. Still down there.
For the record, thank you. Where was Akayesu at this time?
He left the office of the Judicial Police, which is to the right of the Bureau Communal. Is to the right of the office of the Buckmaster. There, at that very point.
IPJ. Thank you, Your Honors. I'm finished with this exhibit at this time.
Judge Aspergren would like to ask a question. Madam, my question is related to this woman whom you've just talked about, who was dragged, to use your own words, from one house to another. You said she was dragged along to be raped. Does this mean that you concluded that those who were dragging her along had the intention of raping her, or does it mean that you saw her being effectively raped? I saw them when they were dragging her along. When they left the spot, as it was getting dark, I saw that the woman was in the state in which I too was. So you saw her before the incident and after the incident, but you did not see the rape. Is that the situation? I saw them as they encircled her. I did not see them penetrate her, but I saw them on top of her. Did you see one or several men on top of her when she was lying on the ground? Asked the judge. I saw them on top of her, and I saw a man who was on her, but I did not see how they took turns. I could only recognize two men among those surrounding her. Therefore, you observed or you saw this woman before, during, and after this act? Yes. Thank you.
At this time, were you the only one watching?
The others died.
But I mean, at the time it was occurring, while you're standing there by the flagpole, were you the only one watching the rape as it was happening, or were there others watching?
We were very many. There were many refugees.
You mentioned before that Akayesu was leaving the area of the IPJ building while this was happening. Where was he going?
He was moving towards his office.
Did he go into his office?
I saw him while he was standing, watching the men drag the woman, and later on he entered the office. Thereafter he left, and we never saw him again.
At the time that this woman was being raped, was she or any of the assailants, or anyone for that matter, making any noises?
I was not near them. I could not hear what they were saying. If I had been near them, they would have done to me what they did to that woman.
You told us that you saw the woman after she was raped. Can you tell us exactly what you saw at this time, please?
That woman was pregnant. I am talking about what I saw after she had been raped. She was completely naked, and she could not put her two legs together. I saw her naked, and later on, probably she covered herself with a piece of cloth. She was hungry, she felt cold, and she was pregnant. She died later on.
Do you know whether or not she died there on that spot or somewhere else?
There is an Interahamwe who told me that the woman died at the Bureau Communal, but I did not witness the death.
While this was happening, while she was raped and immediately after, do you know where the police, the communal police, were?
There was a policeman called Mushumba, another called Seyumba, but who was in plain clothes.
What were they doing as this was happening?
They were in front of the office of the Burgmaster.
Did they do anything to try to prevent the rape from happening?
They did nothing.
Did Akayesu do anything to try to prevent the rape from happening?
He did nothing. He only watched and entered his office. Then later on he came out.
Do you know whether or not Akayesu had a weapon?
He had a small gun that he wore on his belt.
Do you know whether or not the communal police had any weapons?
Yes, they had.
What happened after this woman was raped?
2 days after my arrival at the commune, there was an Interahamwe who was killing people at the commune, at the Bureau Communal. We knew one another before. We didn't see one another often, but when I was trading, he was driving a bus. Before the war, he talked to me that he wanted to live with me, and I told him that was not possible. When he saw me there, he did not marry me. He took me to his place, to his home. It was not far from the Bureau Communal. He had a small house in which he was living.
What happened at this house?
He locked me up in his house for 2 days. He raped me, he would rape me, lock me up in the house and leave.
During that two-day period, could you tell us how many times he raped you, if you recall?
He would rape me about six times. Each time he came, he would have smoked herbs, or he would have drank alcohol like whiskey and others, and he would come and rape me.
I have one question for you at this moment. Do you recall this person's name?
His name was Pierre Rafiki. R-A-F-I-K-I, Rafiki. One last question, Mr. Prosecutor. This Pierre Rafiki who locked you up and who raped you maybe 10 times, was it 6 or 10? 6 or 10? Please repeat, 6 or 10. I'm asking you the question, was it 6 or 10 times? The number of rapes. When he would come during the day, it would be six times during the day. And during the night? At night, it wasn't often because he would arrive very tired and drunk. So he did not rape you in the night, is that right? During the night, he would rape me two or three times. Two or three times nonetheless, says the judge. Were there two nights or several nights? After two nights, he chased me away and I returned to the Bureau Communal. Yes, but were you there for one night or two nights? I understood two nights. Two nights, says the witness. So he raped you each day? It was six times, or was it six times over the two-day period? Over the 2 days, it was six times. So, after that, there were two nights, and on each night, it was two to three times. Is that right? I would say that it was about three times, because he would come, he would take a first turn, and when he would wake up in the middle of the night, he would do it again, and maybe very early in the morning, he would do a third turn. So, as a whole, in total, this would be 9 to 10 times over the two-day period. She is saying that during the day it was worse, but during the night one could count maybe six times. Well, let's leave that for the time being. I simply wanted to say, to understand, that you said that he was drunk. You said that he had also taken alcohol. According to you, was he also under the influence of drugs? Yes, he would take marijuana. He would smoke marijuana in my presence. Did you see this? Yes, I saw. I saw this, and I know the drug. What kind of drug is it? It is marijuana. How is it consumed? I don't know how it's done, but I see each person who consumes this becomes somewhat mad, and if you are caught with marijuana, you are put in prison. But you didn't see him bring this marijuana? I don't know how he had it, but even people cultivate this in they cultivate this clandestinely. No, we're talking specifically about Pierre Rafiki, whose house you were in during the day. I want to know, did you see him in possession of marijuana? Somewhere on him or in his pocket or somewhere in his house? I saw that he would take this from his pocket and he would roll it in a paper. Oh, he was rolling it in paper. Did this look like a cigarette? Yes, it was like a cigarette. Like a cigarette, says the judge. Did he smoke this cigarette? Did he inhale it through his nose? What did he do with it? He was smoking it. Did you see him smoke it? Yes, each time he came back in the evening, he would smoke near me. So you were seeing him smoke marijuana? Yes, I saw him do it. He would roll it, he would smoke it, because we were living together in this house. Is it a drug which, to your knowledge, has strong effects, or rather weak effects. This has rather strong effects because it makes you do things which are impossible, things which you were afraid to do before. How do you know this? I know this because in Rwanda, it is not allowed to smoke this, because normally it's thieves or people who want to do atrocious things who consume this drug. Do you know any other people who use marijuana? Normally, it would be thugs and thieves who would consume marijuana. But I'm asking you, says the judge, did you see any persons do that? I did not see them, but simply the peasants cultivate this plant clandestinely. Now, does everyone also know this? That there are people who consume marijuana? Yes, that there are people who consume marijuana. For example, do not know that this was done, but I'm hearing it from you that this is being done. Rwandans know that it is mostly people who consume marijuana were mostly the attackers. Which attackers? Such as killers. For instance, killers who came to your home, were they people like these? It is possible that they had consumed this, but since they were our neighbors and we would exchange, we would take fire and water from their homes, it is possible that they also consumed this marijuana. It is possible, says the judge, but you're not sure. It is possible, but I do not know. Thank you, madam. We are going to adjourn for 15 minutes. The session stands adjourned. The court is now in session, and the floor is given to the prosecutor to continue with the examination of the witness.
When we left off, you were telling us about what happened to you at the house of Interahamwe Pierre Rafiki. After spending 2 days at Rafiki's house, what did you do next?
He asked me to go and join the others at the Bureau Communal. He asked the witness not to have anything in her mouth. Could she remove what she has in her mouth? She is apologizing, Your Honor. Prosecution, please continue. He asked me to return to the Bureau Communal.
What did you do at this time?
I returned to the Taba Bureau Communal.
When you went back to the Bureau Communal on this occasion, can you describe the situation there for us, please?
When I arrived, the situation was not good because the Interahamwe, the policemen, were beating the refugees.
Where were the refugees at this time?
The refugees were being beaten in the courtyard of the Bureau Communal, and they were being beaten and being asked to leave and go together with the people where they would be killed. When I returned to the Bureau Communal, I found her again on the way. I found her somewhere on the way. She was very tired, and she was able to tell me what had happened. She was able to tell me that a man known as Eredion, who had a restaurant near the Bureau Communal, someone known as Seminane, told her that they were going to give her something to eat. But Eredion's wife chased her away. They took her back to the Bureau Communal and they raped her, and that's where I found her when I came back from Rafiki's house.
What exactly within the compound of the Bureau Communal when you found your sister?
She was in the courtyard of a bureau communal, but near the fence, which is quite close to the road.
Can you describe her physical and mental condition at this time?
When she was talking to me, her voice was not strong because she was hungry and she was also cold. And she spoke to me of what was done to her. She could not move from the place where I found her. I could do nothing for her.
What happened to your sister?
She stayed there. She was hungry and she was cold, but in the final analysis, her body was removed from there when we went to bury the remains of people, and her body had been eaten by dogs.
Witness NN, last week, or the week before, a witness came in here in court and testified. It was the first woman of this group to testify. And we referred to her as Witness JJ. Do you know this person?
Yes, I know her. She's my big sister.
While...
Do you want to speak? Mr. President, I didn't follow. Maybe it's my equipment. I don't know. She said that... Witness JJ, who testified last week, is her elder sister.
That's correct.
Yes. Mr. Akiyesu, is your headset working? Yes. When you were at the Bureau Communal at this occasion, or even before, were you able to see your sister, Witness JJ?
She found us. When she came, she found us at the Bureau Communal because we had been in different hiding places. That means when we left our destroyed house, it was the meeting of the Burgmaster which made us find one another again. It's because of that that we left our hiding places and we were able to find each other again.
While you were at the Bureau Communal, after spending 2 days at Rafiki's house, did you see Akiyesu?
Yes, I would often see Akiyesu.
What was he doing at the times that you saw him?
He was often there, sometimes in front of the Bureau Communal, and sometimes he would ask the a policeman to send us away and to send us into the neighborhood.
Did you actually hear him saying these things to the police?
When I was in front of the Bureau Communal, I heard him say to the policeman, to a policeman known as Mushumba, he asked him to send away, to remove these people from here, and that he was not going to give refuge to Inyenzi.
What did Mushumba do after receiving this order?
He hit us and he chased us away.
Were you personally hit?
He beat an old man who was together with us. He hit him with the butt of his gun on the head. Since I was able to run, I ran, so he didn't hit me.
Do you know a person by the name of Pierre Nyerere?
I know Pierre Nyerere. When we arrived at the Bureau Communal, people said that he was in prison, except he was from near us, not very close, but I know where he lived.
Did you ever see what happened or what became of Pierre Nyerere? Can you please tell us what you saw?
Yes, I know.
Nyerere.
I saw him when he was being taken out of the prison and he was brought into the compound.
Out of the prison?
It was several people, but I don't know them because I didn't live near the commune, the Bureau Communal.
What happened at this time?
When they took him out, the people who I was able to recognize was our burgmaster. We were in the courtyard of the Bureau Communal, and we had fled because we believed that he was going to be killed right in the courtyard itself. We crossed the road, and we stood at the bottom of the road. He was not killed in the courtyard of the Bureau Communal, but he was taken down below the road. When I went away from him, I heard a gunshot, but I was not aware of the person who shot him.
What did you see happening, if anything, to Nyerere?
I only heard a shot, but I didn't know who shot him. But I was close to the place where he was. I was not very close, but I was in the surrounding area of to see.
What happened at this time?
I passed close by his body. I saw that his head had been crushed, as if he had been hit with a hammer. He stayed there during that day and night.
Do you know what became of his body?
The next morning, we went back to the Bureau Communal because when we were going to the village, the people would kill us. And the burgmaster asked Mushumba to bring us hose so that one would go and bury, so that our brother could go and be buried.
Did you hear the burgmaster ask Mushumba to give you the hose?
Yes, he said this when we were in the courtyard, when we were assembled in the courtyard.
What did you do at this time?
We left and started digging. His body, as well as other bodies that were being eaten by dogs, were put in the hole.
After burying Nyerere, what did you do?
We stayed there.
Where is there? Is it in the area where you buried him or the Bureau Communal?
Pardon me? I didn't follow you because she was speaking at the same time as you.
There, did you stay in the area where you buried Nyerere? Or did you go back to the Bureau Communal?
We were roaming about, walking about in front of the Bureau Communal.
How long did you stay at the Bureau Communal at this time?
We spent a few days, not even up to 1 week. And this is how I heard Akayesu tell Mushumba and Rafiki that there were many people and that he had not given refuge to the Inyenzi.
What happened at this time?
They carried away all the persons and packed them in a hole which is below the road.
Stop here for a minute. When you say all the persons, who are we talking about?
The refugees. Are you referring to the persons who were taken down?
Yes.
It is the Interahamwes who took them down. The only one I knew was Rafiki, but Mushumba only took them out of the compound of the Bureau Communal. What do you mean by descendu? That is, take them below the road. Descendu in French may mean killing.
How many refugees did they take?
The number was declining. Some had been killed and some had escaped. I do not know where they went to.
Can you give us an approximation or an estimate?
If I make an estimate, it will be between 200 and 250 people.
And were you within this group?
Yes, I was part of this group, and we went together up to this hole.
What happened once you arrived at this hole?
We spent the whole day in that hole, and we were told that an Interahamwe had gone to look for a grenade.
What was happening as you were spending the day in this hole?
We were in the hole praying. There were believers who were there, who were praying, waiting for death.
In this hole, the refugees, were they men, women, and children?
There were almost no men left. When we reached the Bureau Communal, the men continued to be killed gradually.
Did this Interahamwe ever come back with grenades that day?
He asked us to be patient, that the grenade had not been found, but that he will go back again the following day.
What happened at this time?
We came out of the hole, and on that day we were not killed.
You left this hole, where did you go to?
We returned to the courtyard of the Bureau Communal.
Did anything happen the next day?
The following day, they came and beat us and brought us back to the hole.
As they were bringing you back to the hole, do you know where Akayesu was?
I did not see Akayesu nearby.
This group that was being brought back to the hole, was it the same group as the day before?
Yes, it is the same group. And this is because a grenade had not been found to kill us.
What happened once you arrived at the hole on the second day?
When we arrived at the hole, Rafiki took me out of the group and told me I was his wife.
Did he say that to you or to other people?
When he took me out of the group, he said this when he took me out of the group.
What happened at this time?
He took me out of the group and put me nearby his people, and I remained standing.
You said he put you near his people. Who were these people he put you near?
These are refugees.
What happened at this time?
He said that they no longer went back to look for the grenade. These persons started stabbing people, and the people stabbed were thrown directly into the hole. And the others were beaten with machetes. All these persons were thrown into this hole.
Who was actually doing the stabbing and the hitting with the machetes?
I recognized Rafiki, but there were other Interahamwes whom I could not recognize.
At the time that this was happening, where were you standing?
I was near the hole where people were being killed.
Were you watching this as it was happening?
I closed my eyes, but I could hear people cry or shout, and I could hear the machetes and the stabbing.
How long did this event take place?
When people were being killed? It did not even take 20 minutes. They were killed in a very short time.
And how were you feeling at this time?
Apart from the fact that I was still breathing, it was as if I was dead.
What happened at this time?
I left very few people who had to be killed, and Rafiki asked his younger brother to take me through their home, to take me to his home.
Then what happened?
I stayed at Rafiki's home.
For how long were you at Rafiki's home?
I spent roughly 1 week there.
While you were at Rafiki's home on this occasion for the 1 week, did anything happen to you?
When I stayed in his house, I was maltreated because he used to lock me up and would give the key to other young men who would find me in.
And what would these people do to you?
They came to sleep with me.
What do you... I'm sorry to ask this question, but when you say sleep with me, what do you mean by that?
That means that they... Well, they took sex. They took their sex, in quotes, and they put in mine.
During this week period, how many times did this happen to you, if you recall?
I don't remember the number of times when they came.
Did they come every day?
They came every day, but sometimes they did not rape me. But they continued using atrocious words.
You told us that you stayed at Rafiki's house for a week. Can you please explain to us how you were able to leave?
During that week, I was maltreated. I was locked up in the house. I had no security. I did not eat. But I also ate scarcely. When I ate, sometimes I ate at night when he came back, because during the day he was not there. The presence microphone, please. The presence microphone. That is... The president was asking for clarification on leave to go away or leave to stay on. During that week, he continued sending others, young men, while I was still locked up in the house. Once at night, I felt I was going to die, and I ran away. I returned to the bush to hide myself until the time when soldiers came, until the time when the Kutanyis found me where I was hiding.
And when you were found, were you able to go to a safe location?
Yes.
Witness NN, as a result of the rapes that you have testified to today, did you ever become pregnant?
Yes, I became pregnant, but the child died after birth.
Witness NN, I'd like to take this time to thank you for your testimony. And actually, I have one more question, Your Honor. I apologize. Witness NN, as a result of these rapes, did you have any medical complications or suffer from any diseases?
After the war, I developed pimples. I had itches and I had pus coming out of my genitals.
And how are you today?
At the moment, I feel okay, but sometimes this reoccurs and I have to go back to hospital. It is pus that comes back again.
Witness NN, I'd like to thank you for your testimony. I know that it wasn't easy.
I'll give the floor to the accused who had raised his hand. Thank you, Mr. President. It is in connection with a question that was put to the witness on her state of health as a result of the rape. She said that she had pus in the stomach, and the translation was that she was bleeding, that pus was oozing out of her genital organ. But according to her, the sentence that she herself used was that she had pus in her stomach or abdomen. That is exactly what she said. But in the translation, the translation rendered this as that pus was oozing out. If it was oozing, she should say so. Indeed, the witness said she had pus in the stomach. According to the witness, there was no notion of oozing out, pus oozing out. Well, I think we'll ask the question again, if that be the case. The witness said that she was pregnant as a result of this rapes, and that the child was stillborn. That is one point. And secondly, from a physical point of view, what happened to her? And she's going to answer clearly, and you translate clearly what the witness is going to say. The child died after 5 months. She had said that the child was still born or born or dead, that the child died at birth. She died 5 months later. Our first understanding is that she died after birth without the duration. Now the question is, from a physical point of view, and this has nothing to do with the child, what else did she feel in her body? Apart from this disease, this pain which I had, and the pus that was coming out of my stomach, what does the witness mean by stomach? Because apparently, pus coming from a stomach, what does she mean from by stomach? The pus comes from within my stomach. It oozes out through my vagina. Accused, has this been well translated now? Mr. President, I'm only taking notes, that's all. Now, what she said now, has it been properly translated? Yes, Mr. President, thank you. I suppose, Counsel Changa, you would like to begin the cross-examination in the afternoon. If that be the case, we would adjourn now. We'll resume at 3 p.m. with the cross-examination of the witness by the counsel. The hearing stands adjourned.